All right. So excited for you all to be back joining us with the Aging Well Together show. I am tuning down our great music from the Robert Bradford Quartet, our local Carrboro-based band who gave us their awesome original song, Mayfly, to use as our theme music. This is my 11th show, and I'm so excited. We have awesome guests. We have an awesome topic today. I'm very awesome-y today. We have a super informative show today, all about legal issues and estate and advanced care planning, focusing on needs of older adults and their caregivers, and really all of us. Before we dive into our show topic, I want to give a shout-out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. Our Aging Well Together show is also available to stream anytime on WCOMFM.org. And I've been checking. We have at least one local show or recent show on our site, so you can listen to us whenever you want. We also are available through streaming services, including TuneIn Radio and Radio Garden. So many thanks for listening to us in any way we're coming to you. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the wonderfully helpful team from the Orange County Department on Aging. Please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. And speaking of opportunities and the awesome people at the Orange County Department on Aging, I promised Sydney Sims I would do a shout out for their fabulous activities they have this summer, which I plan to go to. So if you are looking for something fun to do on Wednesday evenings, Alicia's looking at me like, what are you going to say? I've got fun updates. So, Orange County Department on Aging invites the public to unwind with family and friends while enjoying live concerts each Wednesday evening in August, beginning August 2nd. Is that next week?
Yes,
I think so, yeah. So, every Wednesday in August from 6 to 8, you can go and hear music at the Seymour Center outside. Hopefully, it'll programs August 2nd. They have a jazz trio. They have a rock transit oldies show on August 9th, August 16th, August 23rd, August 30th. Different Regina Gale's coming, and Penny Bend is coming, the Blue Moon Steppards. So all kinds of great music. So I promised the Orange County Department on Aging we would encourage the public to go hang out there Wednesdays in August from 6 to 8. So back to our show. If you want information like fun activities or any other issues we discuss on the show, or to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, you can email us at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, or please connect with the Orange County Department on Aging. They can be reached, and please don't write this down if you're driving, but if you're listening at home or streaming, get a piece of paper and a pencil. You can call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070, or they have a wealth of information on their website, which is orangecountync.gov/aging. It's important to put the NC in it, because if you just type in Orange County, you're going to get to California's Department on Aging, which I've seen people do many times, orangecountync.gov. And again, I want to welcome back my fantastic co-host and guest host for the last 2 weeks since I was out, Alicia Reed, who doesn't give herself enough credit when she's on air. So I will say she's a wellness instructor, coordinator, extraordinaire, does all kinds of great fitness and other wellness programs through both of the senior centers in Orange County. And it is her goal at some point over the next 2 to 20 years to get me into one of her classes. But yes, welcome back, Alicia Reed.
Welcome back, Heather. And
thank you.
Way before 2 years.
I know.
Before the fall, even.
You'll get me moving, I
welcome
promise.
Welcome back, Heather.
Thank you. It's great to be back. I am your happy host, Heather Altman. I've spent the last 20-plus years working in aging services, both locally and throughout North Carolina. I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 52, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I am super invested in how we are all aging well together. Now, enough about me. I am turning towards my friend. I'm super excited to have on our show today's guest, Colin Austin. He is the principal attorney for Hillsborough Wills and Trusts. We're going to talk all about how to plan for the known and the unknown, how to make sure we have the right legal documents in order, and how to work with attorneys. Colin is a member of the North Carolina Bar Association, the Orange County Bar Association, the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys, and is an Orange County dementia-friendly business. Thank you. And I'm still introducing, I'm not letting him talk yet, besides the legal discussion, and perhaps we should add a disclaimer, you are my attorney here for this show right now, that we don't give legal advice. This is an informational discussion. But Colin is also an amazing supporter of Aging Well Together in Orange County. Colin is the chair of the Orange County Advisory Board on Aging. He has participated on a number of Master Aging Plan initiatives for our community. We have volunteered together for years on aging issues for our county, and I can share that beyond all the other hats he wears, he is an absolute all-around fabulous and great guy. So welcome, Colin.
Welcome, Colin.
Thank you so much. It's really fun to be here today.
I know you've heard about the show since its inception. So I'm so excited you're finally on. There is so much to dive into. I have questions. I know Alicia has questions for you. But before we start peppering you with all kinds of legal chit-chat, tell us about yourself, where you're from, what brought you into law, a bit about your background.
Sure. Well, again, it's just a beautiful day here.
It's hot.
And,
it is beautiful. Sorry.
Yeah, it's interesting. So the first part of my career, I came to this area to go to law school. I was at Duke, and it was there that I really got more interested in what was happening out in the community. Worked with an immigrants' rights project and just connecting with different legal services organizations and just saw such a need out there. And I worked for many years as an outreach worker, a legal guide, a helper, a grant writer, working with various nonprofit groups. And about 8 years ago, I decided to start my own practice. Mm-hmm. And I talked to many attorneys to try to figure out which area of the law would I want to be in. Mm-hmm. You know, corporate law? Probably not.
Nothing against corporate law. Some of my closest friends are corporate lawyers, but go on.
Yeah, they're the best people.
Political
sure.
lawyer. Political lawyer.
A political lawyer. Yeah, she's shaking her head.
Yeah. So there's lots of different areas of the law. But as I was meeting with different attorneys, I met a couple who were doing what was called elder law.
Mm.
I'd never heard of that, that was a separate field of law. And I was really taken with the kind of work that they were doing, the direct work with individuals and their families, the way they often connected with local organizations. That's how I got connected to the Department on Aging, as well as other nonprofit groups, and just the need, in our society to help older people understand their legal rights, understand how to put in place important protections, to have an advocate that they could count on. And so that began my journey into elder law, and I've just loved it every step of the way.
All right, there's a lot we're going to talk about elder law, but we're going to hold off. We're going to tangent for a second because I did do a bit of stalking of you. You've been my friend for a long time. I did go on your website. I will give. I know we don't encourage anyone to go to any specific service, but I did go to your website, hillsboroughwills.com. Did a bit of stalking and prep.
I did too.
Ooh, look at it. We're prepared.
I was stalking.
And I will respect that you went to Duke. It is hard for me as a double Tar Heel, but you, so I will forgive that because Duke Law, not a bad school. However, you actually can wear both shades of blue. You have another degree. First of all, you have a few degrees before your law degree. I saw that you got, it's okay if I say, well, it's on your website, so yes, it's public. You also have a master's in regional planning that you got at our own fabulous UNC. And so you had an interesting career, as you were talking about, before you went into law. And I think you're so complex and fabulous, and I want to give a shout out and a comment about that. How did that regional planning, is it a kind of go into your work or inform it?
Yeah, good question, and nice nice bit of research there.
Oh, but, yeah.
Yeah, so when I was in law school, I spent my summers working with legal aid, and especially there was a group called Farmworker Legal Services. I had spent some time in Latin America, and, mm-hmm. and so that was great work, going out to labor camps and talking to some of the people that were coming through, harvesting tobacco or cucumbers, mm-hmm. sweet potatoes, and talking with them about their rights. And so that just got me interested in how these systems were working. UNC, you may know, has a very famous planning school.
They do.
DCRP, yep. The Department of City and Regional Planning. And it's not all just people who are looking at maps and things, which is also really interesting.
Yeah.
But there's a whole element there of economic development and helping people get ahead. And so that's kind of where I did some work. And I ended up working with some community development corporations and others. And those were important times, trying to bring some legal yeah. skills to that as well.
That's a really thoughtful background. And one other interesting fact about you that you know that I didn't realize is that your undergraduate degree is in Spanish and you're fluent in Spanish. And so when you, I can tell then in the work that you did, you were able to do work both in English and in Spanish. And I think be able to pull in literally and figuratively more voices and into workers' rights and individual rights. And I love that you also speak Spanish, and I want to sort of talk about that maybe later on when we talk about equity issues and mm-hmm. and representation of everyone. So
sure,
I noticed that. All right, should we jump into law? All right, let's jump into law. So let's dive into the planning that you provide. I read that your goal is to, I love how you put it, to protect family resources and to create a legacy of opportunity for the future. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how do you do that? Big picture.
So a lot of the work that I do is helping people put in place the documents that they need to protect themselves during their lifetime, but also after their death. And what I love about it is the process.
Yeah.
If you can imagine, you know, sitting down, as I often do, with an elderly person or couple, perhaps some of their children, perhaps a sibling. It's often a conversation with different family members or friends, trying to see how they can meet their own goals, how they can protect resources for their family, how they can get the care that they might need as they get older, mm-hmm. Without draining everything mm-hmm. and putting their family at risk. So everywhere from, you know, a young couple with a new baby to single people that are looking for their next step and want to protect themselves, to people who are retired and just want to make sure that they have a great plan in place. So it's that's one of the great things about my work. I meet a lot of different kinds of people from different backgrounds and just get to talk with them about what is the customized response or solution to some of their concerns.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask, and then I'm going to, I know, I'll ask a general, and then I know Alicia's going to jump in with more of the specifics. But when you talk with folks, what are the must-haves that when you sit down and you understand what their needs are and their goals are, what do you find are the must-haves that everyone you talk to or the vast majority, you're like, these are the documents or the thought considerations? What did I once hear that having conversations is one thing, but actually documenting it is how it, you know, really goes into play. So what do you sit down and say, hey, now that I know what you need, these are the things you need?
Yeah, well, really often at first, we'll just talk about their families mm-hmm. and we'll talk about their employment and their experience in the community and their other connections and what's important to them. Because that all goes into what their plan is going to be. So just in having and taking some time to have those conversations to really get to know someone mm-hmm. And to hear what some of their goals are and what's, you know, important to them. Do they have a family farm that they want to preserve? Do they have a nephew who's disabled that they want to somehow leave some resources to? They may be divorced. They may have a child who has an addiction problem. So, you know, these initial conversations take some time, but it's really important to understand what's motivating them. It's not just about, okay, who do you want to be your executor? Where do you want to be? What are the dynamics? What are the needs here? What are the key concerns?
And my thoughts are, so you're building a relationship. It's not like I'm here, I come to your office, tell you what I want, and go out. It seems to be more to it. You're learning about the farm. You're learning what they want to. It's not just you're going to die, leave this to that, and leave this to them type of transaction, I guess, is what I'm saying. So I guess I never saw of it as relationship building, you know, that you get to know your client. You get to have a relationship with your client as far as knowing what their wants and their needs are.
Yeah, that's really important to me. I take a lot of time to do that, and I like that. But you don't always get that with an attorney. So that's just my style. And yeah, but I think for the most part, people appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that would be, because my thoughts are just go in, sign the document, you prepare them, and that's it. But can I ask you the myth about that will and the trust?
Sure.
That people...
yeah, we're getting into the specific documents. I heard once, I don't know if it was through your talk, I've watched Colin do talks before, and I think, and I wrote it down so I would remember, but there's, you know, five key documents. I made my list, but yeah, you have a question about wills and trusts, but let's get into the...
Yeah, that. I guess my question is, because there are so many myths out there, you don't really need a will or a trust. You could just die and then let the state handle. Is that how it goes?
Well, one of the sayings that I often share with people about estate planning is that every adult should have a will.
Okay.
Every adult should have a will.
By what age?
18.
Yeah, as soon as they're an adult, and as soon as they're, you know, making important decisions, it's true. As you mentioned, if you do not have a will and you pass away, that doesn't mean you don't have a plan. What you get is the state plan. And the state plan is basically your estate will go to next of kin. But that may not be what you'd want your plan to be.
That's easy for some and very complicated for others. So,
when you say next of kin, do you mean the oldest or the, you know, the oldest?
Your spouse, I would think, would be first, right?
And not necessarily.
Oh, see, this is why people need a will, because they just assume, oh, if I go, my spouse will get it, or it will, how does it get evenly distributed between children? So, right? So what's the state plan?
Well, for example, if you are married and you pass away and you have no will, if you have any parents still living, and if you have a spouse that's living, and if you have any children that are living, it's going to be shared among them.
Oh, see, people, I think they just assume, oh, it'll go to, oh, so that can be a lot of people. And yeah, okay.
And so what if you're separated, and then that person comes out of the, you know, they've been separated forever, but now they're right in the line of that?
Yes, and until they're actually divorced, they're still the spouse. So
this is why you need to have it spelled out in a formal will, right? So that way you have some control, or as you say, protecting that your wishes are granted.
Yeah, that's right. You know, typically, people that come to me usually fall into one of three categories. First, they're a young couple, and they're just starting to have children. And so they're thinking about, okay, maybe we need to start getting things in order. There's an accident. You know, the will is the place where you would name a guardian for your children.
Right after we had our first baby, that's when my husband and I set up, because there's your estate, there's your stuff, but the big issue is who will be the guardian of my children. So.
Yep, that's right.
Without a will, what happens with that?
Well, it would go to a hearing with a judge, and the judge would decide who would be the guardian for the child.
So, see, Alicia's got big eyes. Like, ooh. Again, these are why it's important issues, and I'll overshare that Colin's not my attorney. I'm so sorry, because we met after I had my baby 22 years ago, and now I'm re-upping all of them, because now my children are legal adults. They're 21 and almost 18, so we just are in the process of revamping it, because things change. So, okay, so you said that your clients generally fall into one of three groups. So you said the young couple, which I am no longer part of a young couple, but I was, and so I reflect that. What's the next?
And then there are individuals or couples that are approaching retirement. So they're in their 50s, their 60s. They're starting to think about, they have more resources, or they've just want to have a plan in place. Maybe they've, their parents have passed away, or they just have been through some experiences where they want to put something in place. And again, many people at that point may own a home. They may have different resources in different places. There's some family property in another county or another state. Just a little more complicated estates at this point. And so they often feel, okay, we need to put our affairs in order.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when one person is in one state and one person is in another state? I mean,
do you mean a physical state, like a geographic state or a
geographic
cognitive? Okay.
Because all the states have different laws, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Each state has their own laws about probate and about how estates work.
Oh, my goodness.
So I usually recommend to have your estate planning done by an attorney in the state where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if, for example, if you had your work done here in North Carolina and you ended up moving to Ohio, those documents will still be valid.
Mm-hmm.
But I usually tell people, if you end up staying there for a few years and think you're going to sell down, go ahead and redo your documents for Ohio.
So that is a current question and issue in my own family. So I know I can't get official legal advice, but my mom passed away, but my dad moved down here from permanently, used to be in Massachusetts, now here in North Carolina. Alicia's buddies with my dad now, and all of those documents were created in Massachusetts. And it hit me, because I read something, I'm like, oh, does he need to redo them all now that he's in North Carolina resident? But that's a pain when you go through,
right?
So your state question is a good one. What's the good word? Reciprocity.
Did you have to do it?
We haven't redone it. It's still Massachusetts documents, but I am curious about that.
So those are still valid. Mm-hmm. He probably has some health care documents and financial documents, and then maybe a will or a trust.
Yeah.
So they can still be effective. But a couple of things. One is, for example, with the healthcare forms, I use the North Carolina forms. They're the ones most recognized here, and I think legally the strongest. So if you show up in a hospital and you've got a Massachusetts form, well, they'll, work with it as they can, but they're not going to be used to it.
Yeah.
I think the more another issue there is that the documents themselves are important. They're very important to list what you're saying and doing. But the relationship with an attorney is also important. So having someone to go to when there's trouble or you've got a question or a family member needs some help in the moment.
So local would be best
in the state of which you reside. I want to dive into some of the questions, but I don't want to get off track, which I'm a queen of. But you talked about three groups. So you did the first one. You did young couples. The second one are adults, as the individuals and adults as they are heading towards retirement. What's the third group?
Those that are older.
I was assuming those are older adults.
Their,
okay.
You know, 70s, 80s. They may have a deceased spouse. They may be single. They are facing different types of issues now, health issues, memory loss, possibly. Dynamics in their family.
What if there's no one there and they're in a place, a home, you know, one of the homes that are really nice around here, and does the home automatically take possession of their properties?
Well, again, if they were to pass away, they'd look into the will first, and then if there wasn't a will, they'd try to find next of kin. But I think for me, the big distinction for elderly people is to make sure that their voice is heard. You can imagine most of the elderly people I meet with, somebody brings them, like their children, often, maybe their spouse. So you may be in a room with two or three other people, or with maybe just one child. And so it's, as an elder law attorney, we are trained and we have a code of ethics to really focus on who is our client.
Yes.
Because it can be very easy for a child to bring their parent in who's elderly and just kind of talk over them, or this is what they need, this is who should be the agent, this is who's going to be the executor. And so I have a little pamphlet that I use that's put out by the American Bar Association that says, why am I left in the waiting room?
Yeah.
And
that's
for, you know, the children of people, because I'll always take some time and say, you know, I'm an elder law attorney and I need to speak directly with my clients. And so sometimes we'll talk through some ideas, but there'll be a time when I'll have them go sit out in our lobby, and I've got a little noisemaker to cover the conversation. And I talk to my clients, okay, tell me, you know, these are things we talked about. What is it that you want?
That is so good. And
it
I
is.
Know I have to remember that since I'm super chatty and my dad's super chatty. And when we go, he was sick for a while. And so there was a time when I did need to be his healthcare power of attorney or kind of speak for him just a little bit. But as soon as he got better and we do lots of meetings together, I have to get myself to, you know, shut up, because it is his time to talk, also to show that he's fully
able.
Competent
He's
and
able,
able
to,
and
right.
He has his goals. And so as much as I can sort of take charge in some areas, I was like, no, when it comes to either legal or financial, I need to be quiet for a number of reasons. But it's his time, it's his decision.
It is a touchy,
and also you want the person like Colin to be sure that you're getting your client's wishes, not the chatty daughter who's, you know, pushy.
And making the decisions for them.
Yeah. I do want to talk about some of the specific documents and planning, because my sense is that most people, when they think about their legal needs, and you've alluded to this a little bit, but they might just think about, oh, after I die.
Right.
And that they don't realize that there's also a series of protections. And you mentioned with some of the healthcare documents that there are some protections and wishes that we want to outline. It's called advanced care planning, I guess, while we're still alive, and either through some temporary or permanent change. So that's why I want you to talk about the sort of range of when you help people understand and articulate their goals, that it's not just about after they pass away, but there may be times. So talk us through that a bit.
Yeah.
Or do you find that with people? Like, do they not realize the range of documents they need while they're still alive?
Yeah, I think that's correct. Most people think, oh, I need a will.
That's it.
And they'll come in and they may say that. But for example, just a good, solid estate planning package would include a will, but also a financial power of attorney, a document called the healthcare power of attorney, and there's two other healthcare documents. One is called a living will or advanced directive for a natural death, and a HIPAA authorization, the medical records authorization. Mm-hmm. So that is your classic basic estate planning package.
Mm-hmm. Those are the five. I'm interrupting because I know I said five documents before, and I just counted. Those are the key five that I've always heard about. So, listeners, if you wanted to know what I meant by five, it's those five.
Are those Colin called the five wishes?
No, that's different. Five wishes is a different.
Okay.
Let's get into that in a little bit.
Okay. I didn't know that.
That's how you. That's a specific. Pamphlet and document where you can outline, and two or three of those are part of the five wishes, but it's the the package has complete.
Yeah, that's correct.
And that's the package that you go over with clients.
Yes, and there's some variations on that package, and then the other alternative is to set up a trust. We can talk about that too if you want, but yeah, let me tell you about those extra documents.
People
know a lot about a will. They know that you have an executor and your beneficiaries and kind of what that looks like. But they may usually have never experienced a financial power of attorney.
Yeah.
Or why that would be important. The financial power of attorney is a document where you name the person that could sign legal documents for you, manage your finances during your lifetime. If you were in the hospital, if you were incapacitated or just needed some extra help, they're the person you could call on. That document is very important, especially as you get older.
It's very important, I can tell you from experience. When you have a family member who's unconscious in the hospital, guess who wants to see it? The bank? So go on. I can just speak from experience. These are great documents, and people don't realize how important it is.
Yes. Yeah, so in many ways, it's just as important as a will.
Can I ask you, when you say the bank, so they should be a place to be found, documents?
Yes. What do you mean?
You said the bank wanted to know.
Well, if you do any financial or real estate, any transactions on behalf of the person or pay bills or you need to be able to prove that you have the ability to speak for that person.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what that document does.
Yes, that's what that document does.
Yeah.
Why am I answering it? You're the lawyer.
Think of an older client.
Well, you said you had just done through that.
Well, I'm just validating. Not that anyone would question what the attorney says, but say that's true, he said.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So the financial power of attorney is where the person can name their trusted representative. It might be one of their children, might be their spouse, close friend, who, if they were unable to manage things themselves, who would they want to pay the bills, to sign checks, to manage their accounts, to do things like file their taxes for them, apply for benefits on their behalf, if they were, for whatever reason, were unable to do that. So what's so important about that is if you do not have that document and you are not able to manage things on your own, the only alternative is getting a guardianship.
Which is a legal court. Tell us about guardianship. It scares me, but yeah, you don't want that, ideally.
Yeah, if you do not have a financial power of attorney, then... in order for someone to represent you legally, they'd have to obtain a guardianship, and that involves hearings
before the courts again.
Yes, so you have to admit hearings before the judge. It is humiliating for the person
because they have to be deemed incompetent. And it's one thing if they're unconscious; that doesn't hurt their feelings. But if they're conscious but are going through some sort of cognitive changes, right? That's humiliating.
Oh my goodness. I'm sure a lot of people don't know this information. I hope they're all listening.
Okay.
Yeah. And just with that simple financial power of attorney, you can avoid all of that because you've then got your trusted person who you've given legal authority to act on your behalf. And they can manage your bank account. They can sign documents for you, a deed, whatever needs to be done. Without having to report all of this to the court and without you having to go through a trial.
You think about some of the long-term care needs. So you could have someone who's in the hospital and then they need to go permanently into skilled nursing or assisted living. And so in order to have the funds for that, the family members might have to sell the house and be able to use the money. And so all of these things, I'm just coming up with some everyday scenarios, right, where the the financial power of attorney. Sometimes it's called the durable power of attorney, right? They have the ability to do that, to be able to have the funds to.
So
free.
Without that, all this has to be determined by the courts while this person is waiting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's right. They have to be determined incompetent. And
but wouldn't that take time?
Well, it can take time, months, yes. And it's usually an all or nothing, you know, either the guardian has complete control over their life or none. So, mm-hmm. so that durable power of attorney, and durable means that it remains in effect even if the person becomes incapacitated, it's durable.
Mm-hmm. I had no idea what that meant. Thank you.
And that very important document, so you can have your trusted person that can be there to manage things much easier. And they present that document at a bank or whatever institution, and that allows them to manage things.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got those three healthcare documents, the healthcare power of attorney. Mm-hmm. That's where you name your healthcare representative if you're unable to communicate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. The living will is also called advance directive for a natural death. That's where you can make a statement about end-of-life situation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a coma or the doctors determine you're not coming back, at what point do you want to be let go?
Mm-hmm.
And you can make a statement for your family to say, if the doctors say I'm not coming back, let me go. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice document where people mm-hmm. can have their wishes known. And the HIPAA authorization is just a medical records authorization. Allows certain people to access your records or talk to your doctor. They're much tighter about medical records these days.
Yeah.
So that's a good
thing.
So
is the new HIPAA saying that all the family members, you know how someone might want your medical records, you have to determine who can get it or not?
Yeah.
You have to give permission and list them on a HIPAA form, or else they will not release those records.
And just for a little bit of fun facts, HIPAA, people, right, stands for the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. Most people think it stands for Health Information Privacy, but it actually, there's a whole fun history of that. But I know when I do my HIPAA forms, I've actually quite a few names on it, different than your healthcare power of attorney, which you might have one person and then a backup or... But it's whoever you want to be able to have the information for the hospital to release it. And because I live in a different state for many years than some of my extended family, I've had some situations where good friends had healthcare situations and their families were out of state. And so, you know, for me, I have the people closest to me, so that I'm comfortable having the information. So it includes some friends as well as some family members.
Hmm.
But, yeah, you can list...
But if you don't list, they don't get it.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's some good information.
And then you had the question about the five wishes document.
Right, right.
So what the five wishes document is a combination of a healthcare power of attorney and a living will.
Now, is that filed with the courts, or is it notarized, or how is it?
Good question. That's actually a good question that you don't realize how in depth that question is. So, because I know a little bit about.
So it does not need to be filed. You can give it to your doctor, and they can keep it on the record. What it is, it's kind of more like a plain English version of a healthcare power of attorney. So I usually say, if you're not going to go to a lawyer to get those documents, go ahead and use the five wishes
mm-hmm.
because you're going to understand it better. And it's becoming more accepted.
Yeah.
The Department on Aging uses those and distributes those. And I think it's a good document.
But how do you verify it?
It's witnessed, and in some states it needs, and ours is one of them, it does need to be notarized in order to be fully... Look at me playing lawyer. In effect, what I do love about five wishes is the first 1 to 3 wishes are your living will and advance directives. But what I really, really love about five wishes is like wishes 4 and 5, which is not legal, but more what is the environment you want to be in as you're passing. I use both of them for my parents, and it was so helpful. Where, if you have a preference, are you comfortable passing away in the hospital?
Oh,
what
okay.
kind of music do you want playing? Who do you want to be in the room? Do you want any spiritual involvement through
okay.
clergy or others? And then wish five is after you pass away, how do you want to be remembered? What kind of services do you want? So I went through it with both my parents and my in-laws, and it's four and five that I, wishes four and five that are also just as fascinating that people don't always think about. So there's my shout out for that.
Yeah, I think it's a good document, again, especially as a supplement or mm-hmm. if you're not, you know, going to an attorney to do that.
Because now, could you bring that with you to the attorney and then you file them or you keep it, you keep the copy?
Yeah, sometimes people will bring one and I'll keep a copy on file. We'll probably usually do a statutory one as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a nice place to write your wishes, and it's definitely more understandable. I usually spend a lot of time explaining the healthcare documents because
there's some complexity and confusion to it, you know, so people, I think, really want to think through what it means and be comfortable with it. I will say, I'll do a shout out because my other work is with the North Carolina Serious Illness Coalition, mm-hmm. which is a coalition of healthcare providers and advocates around the state. And advanced care planning is a really big focus of it. And there's lots of great resources and videos and information on that website, NCSI for North Carolina Serious Illness Coalition, ncsi.org. Lots of advanced planning, and there's a whole legislative focus right now. North Carolina is one of four states, though I only counted three, but I hear we're only one of four states that require both two witnesses and a notary to make these documents official. Most other states, it's two witnesses or a notary, and that and is a big deal, especially in rural parts of the state, mm-hmm. For folks who don't have access to a notary, or conversely, in a healthcare situation where they may not have access to witnesses. They may have access to a notary, but not to sort of not connected witnesses. So there's currently legislation in play right now in our Senate in North Carolina.
That's good to know.
So there's a little, there's my facts there.
Yeah, that issue was really raised during the height of COVID.
Because it wasn't easy to get. I had to deal with this. It's when you're in your own home, really hard to find a notary. And these are important wishes you want to make. Feel free. Do you have a feeling about this? I know. And the Bar Association of North Carolina supports this change.
Yeah, but absolutely. It should be easier for people to make their wishes known.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I support people being able to make statements and mm-hmm. and not complicating it too much. That said, you know, the lawyer in me mm-hmm. is like, okay, well, we want to make sure that they're the ones that actually signed it.
Yes.
We want to make sure that somebody saw and it wasn't just
forged.
A family member or someone yeah. else that, you know, wrote their name on
right.
there.
Yeah, there's a weird complexity to it because it is, those documents are created in order to not have fraud, not have abuse, to be able to, for people to outline their wishes, and yet if they're not used appropriately. But I will say that in my work, and I did it in my own family, I strongly encourage anyone over the age of 18, this is not an older adult, any of us, and this is how it was taught to me, and it's not, any of us can be hit by a truck, any of us
right.
can have major issues, and you need to be able to outline who you want to speak for you, if you can't speak for yourself, and who you want to be able to make decisions and what your own decisions are. And so I had that all filled out for my daughter, who's 21. We filled them out in Colorado and where she lives. And
that's amazing that you did that, Heather, because I
hang
say
out with attorneys all the time.
I think there's a low number on who does that. Starting at the age of 18.
It's 30, isn't it? 35%, only 35% of the folks in the population have filled out these forms. I just saw that number not too far away. Am I making that up? There's different numbers.
Colin
had a look. I'm curious.
40, 30, 45 years old, you're not thinking get my will done or get you know, get this in order. It just our society doesn't encourage it.
Colin, your thoughts, because we've asked you two things before, because otherwise Alicia and I are just going to keep
chatting. Yeah.
Well, with the healthcare documents, I am seeing more younger people, usually their parent bringing them
okay.
in.
There you go,
okay.
people like me.
To,
okay.
For the healthcare, you know,
yeah.
if
okay.
make sure they have that in place, and sometimes for the financial power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So there again, even though they're young, I have to know who my client is. So I need to talk with them alone.
Not the pushy mom.
Oh.
See, I can play the pushy daughter or the pushy mom.
I'd say, Heather, would you mind sitting out in the lobby?
You have to read the brochure.
Yes.
And why am I in the
waiting room?
Yes.
That'd be my mantra now.
So you're saying 18, 19, 20. Imagine going to college, and that's where that conversation probably would strike then. You're going
yes.
to college, and then I can see. But on an average.
Well, I would say this. With the health care documents, if someone's in the hospital and they're in an emergency and they can't communicate themselves and they don't have a health care power of attorney, according to the legislation here in North Carolina, the doctors are going to look for their next of kin.
Yeah.
So they would go to spouse, parent, and there's kind of a, it's even outlined in the statute. So it's not that no one would make a decision.
Yes.
But you know, sometimes a parent or others may also want to access some records or do something.
Yeah.
So I like it because it gets young people thinking about estate planning.
It's important.
It's like, oh, all right, yes, these connections we have are legally important.
Mm-hmm.
Should be in high school.
Well, and the HIPAA documents, I will say, it's since I have now an almost 18-year-old and a 21, as soon as my daughter turned 18, and I'm, you know, taking her the doctor's appointment and paying for it, the moment she turned 18, the doctor's office talked to her and said, we need a HIPAA form or we won't release any information to your mom.
So
I couldn't make appointments. So a lot of the doctor's offices, as soon as your, you know, kids turn 18, you have to fill out those forms, and that's why in my circle with, you know, college moms, especially when you have kids out of state, they were like, you need these forms because they're not going to release information to you, even if it's your kid necessarily. I mean, maybe they will, but it just gets a little dicey. And in an emergency, maybe they will because hospitals, but doctor's offices get really interesting. So I've had to, and I have to re-up them every year with my kids' doctors.
Well, that's good that the doctor, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, as of Saturday, so. Sunday when my kids turns 18, that doctors are going to have me fill out the HIPAA form. So sometimes you have them separate and sometimes medical, but.
Yeah, now that we live in a world of these giant healthcare systems, they're very keen on getting all those documents in place. And so the doctors will be very happy if you do it yourself, but if you don't have them, they'll remind you or they'll encourage you to get those in place.
So we're having fun. I'm looking at the time that we have a few minutes left. And Alicia, you had a question. You asked it a little bit, that difference between a will and a trust and these issues of, and Colin, you talked about a big picture, but this issue of protecting your finances, and this is where I know it gets really complex into taxes, and but there's a reason why these documents get put into place, right? So that way, whether it's the family farm or your house, you know, there it's an interesting
Is that where probate comes in?
Because yeah, that's
when
correct.
With the trust, with or without one, you're in probate. Because a lot of people are confused, sometimes myself, about what probate actually means.
I know I always get confused. I use it in the wrong term.
Yeah, good question. So usually people's main choice for their estate planning, for what happens after their death, is either a will or what's called a living trust. And we talked a little bit about a will. You know, if someone passes away and they have a will, the person named as executor will take that will to the courthouse, and that starts the process called probate. It's a court-supervised process where the executor is then going to conduct an inventory of the estate. They have to contact all the beneficiaries. They have to post a notice to creditors. You might see that in the newspaper sometimes. They have to bring in any other resources that are outstanding. They have to keep track of everything down to the penny and report those documents. So we do a good bit of probate in our office. It usually takes a year or more.
It does.
So I don't know if you've ever been through a probate process.
I have.
But it's... There's a reason for it. The court's going to supervise, make sure that money's managed, but it takes a long time. It can be aggravating.
That is
and that's
unknown.
Why you want to have all the protective documents. And even, I'll just overshare, even with everything set up for my mom, about a year and a half after she died, we found some savings bonds that my grandmother had taken out. And my grandmother passed away. It went to my mom. My mom passed away. And so in order to cash... These savings bonds, we had to go through, open up her estate. I mean, it was, and I played attorney. I was like, it's not a lot of money. Any money would go on attorney's fees. So I went in with my dad and met with the Orange County folks. They were very kind and generous. But yeah, it.
That is not known. That's just. The average person does not know that.
Yeah, living is complicated and dying is complicated.
It can be very complicated for your family. If a person's estate is very simple, it does take some paperwork, but you can get through it. As people's estates become more complicated, they have multiple accounts, they may have a cabin somewhere, or they have part of a family farm somewhere, or they just have a number of resources, then you're starting to look at a living trust. And the way that works is you create a trust during your lifetime, and you retitle your key assets to your trust so that when you pass away, none of that needs to go through the court system or through probate. It's already in the trust. You've named your successor trustee, and they manage everything privately. And you can usually wrap it up in 2 or 3 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why it's helpful. And you had mentioned before, and I know with our little bit of time, especially thoughtful if you have children or grandchildren who are either minors, right, under 18 or under 21, and you want, you know, either for tax or just life purposes, you don't want them to inherit so much all at once, but also for individuals with special needs, right, putting into special needs trust. So you want to make sure that your loved one is taken care of, a child, a nephew, a grandchild, right? Because I think I don't know that much about it, and I know that takes
well, the
a
courts,
thoughtfulness.
Right. Will the courts handle that throughout the child's, the special needs, say you have a special needs, will the courts handle that, the estate or the attorney handle the estate for the duration of the life of the child?
Yeah. So in a trust, you can have a provision for a child. Say you wouldn't want them to receive an inheritance when they turned 18. Maybe you say, I'd like to stay in the trust until they turn 26. Until that time, the trustees managing that for them can pay for education, health, other things, but we don't want to give them everything at once. Or it could be for a disabled person, a young person, or older person that's receiving some sort of public benefit. You don't want to knock them off that benefit. So that is another advantage of a trust. It can manage an inheritance for someone. The one other situation you didn't mention, Heather, that I would want to slip in is, of course, having for older people, if you ever need long-term care.
Yes.
Then you want your spouse to have a provision in their will. There might be a stay-at-home spouse and one that's in a nursing home or getting long-term care. And if they're receiving Medicaid and the spouse at home passes away, you don't want all those resources to have to shift to pay for that.
Yeah.
So that's a little more complex.
But there's a lot of that's when you need an attorney also just to protect funds if Medicaid's involved or other financial support. Yeah, you just don't want to mess it up. So basically there's lots of ways those of us who are not attorneys can mess things up. So it's hard as a non-attorney, it's hard to spend the money on, because it does cost some money, but it's also supposed to protect your wishes and your assets. So it's getting
spent.
People over it. Well money spent, hopefully. All right, we have Colin. Anything else that you didn't share? I did want to give a shout out because I do love to stalk you. For those who are computer literate and on Facebook and on LinkedIn, follow Colin and what is it, Hillsboro Wills and Trusts, because you do all these fun educational videos where you stand in front of a whiteboard and you talk about things. So if listeners are enjoying being on the computer and you want to go on social media, Colin's got a great presence. So I'm doing that. What else do you want to share with our listeners?
How can they reach you?
Well, through your website, right?
Yeah, probably the website is the best place, hillsborowills.com. Those videos are fun. They're 30-second videos.
Oh, wow.
I have a big whiteboard in my office because I'm kind of a visual person, and I like to draw up how things work. But they're fun snippets, and a lot of people enjoy them. But, I would say estate planning is a great gift for your family. And
that is a good gift.
It is a good gift.
You know, our mission for our firm is to strengthen families. To strengthen families through strong estate planning. And it can either be something that tears families apart if you don't have some of those protections in place. But if you do, it's just beautiful to see how family members can support each other, how they can create those legal protections.
Yeah, and I felt that firsthand. Having had some discussions beforehand, you don't want to have these discussions during crises. It's emotional enough, it's upsetting, it's stressful enough, and I did feel like it was a great gift that I had done with my parents before the time came. Even the music that I played as my mom was passing away, and you know, just to get the documents in place, but also their wishes in place, was really helpful. So, Colin, thank you for helping people on their journey. Thank you for having them understand the different ways to prepare. Alicia, thank you for coming back.
Thank you for coming back, Helen.
Yeah. And Colin, you were such a good sport with us peppering questions and adding our own insights. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on Aging Well Together. We are coming to you on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and we look forward to having you join us next week. Thank you.